I'm culinary nutritionist Stephanie Sachs, and welcome to Stirring the Pot. Stirring the Pot. The show that focuses on food, nutrition, health, and cooking. Nutritious always meets delicious on Stirring the Pot, with a little attitude sprinkled in. This show would not be possible without the generous support of Naturopathica Healing Arts Center and Spa. Stirring the Pot. Today's show is Nutrition Integrity, and I'd like to welcome Andy Bilotti, a Las Vegas-based nutritionist with a plant-centric and whole food focus who takes an interest in food politics, deceptive food marketing, sustainability, and social justice. His work has been published in Grice, The Huffington Post, Today's Dietitian, Food Safety News, and Civil Eats, among others. He is also the creator and co-founder of Dietitians for Professional Integrity, a group that advocates for ethical and socially responsible partnerships within the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. You can read more about his work on his blog and can also follow him on Twitter and Facebook. And we'll get those exchanges from you, Andy, at the end of the show. But welcome to Stirring the Pot.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
So how did you develop this interest in nutrition and obviously truth-seeking nutrition?
I always kind of had an interest in nutrition as a teenager. It started when I started reading about vegetarianism, but it wasn't until I actually wanted to pursue it academically as a career until 2004, and that was when I watched Morgan Spurlock's documentary Supersize Me. That was the turning point. Funny enough, I saw a documentary about 2 or 3 days after I graduated with an undergraduate degree in journalism, nothing to do with science. Then I saw that documentary, and it kind of sparked this idea to go back to school for a graduate degree in nutrition.
And you went to NYU?
Yes, I did.
And you'd studied with the great Marion Nestle, who is one of my faves.
Fantastic, yeah, one of my mentors and role models and somebody who the nutrition field is so lucky to have.
It's unbelievable. It really is unbelievable. I don't think people understand how powerful she is and how important her voice is, Marion Nestle.
And how influential, because you know, in her book, Food Politics, I think that's one reason why food politics has now kind of gone mainstream. She played a huge role in that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And food safety and so on and so forth. So what do you do as a practicing nutritionist?
I work in corporate wellness. I'm a health coach. So what I do is I work, you know, of course, on site at a company and I provide health coaching to the employees.
But you're a health coach with an MSRD.
Yes. For this particular company, the job requirement does call for a master's degree in a health-related field. Not everybody is an RD, but a few of us are RDs. And I actually like the fact that you get a nice, diverse group of people with different backgrounds in different health sciences. I think it makes for a more interesting job environment.
Absolutely. And everybody has a role.
Exactly, yes.
And so I noticed on your website you do everything from counseling one-on-one to teaching people how to choose better foods by taking them shopping. What else do you do?
Well, I don't have that many private clients outside of my full-time job, but most of it is counseling, some supermarket tours. And of course, one thing I do apart from my full-time job is a lot of my freelance writing, which I really love. That's kind of the blending of that journalism background with the nutrition degree, where I usually in my articles tend to talk about the food industry and often do some critical thinking and analysis of their behaviors, most of which are usually deceptive in nature. But I just like to write about kind of the state of the food industry and bring some food politics into that.
So I have in front of me an article from the Wall Street Journal, Eat Right Meltdown for Kraft Singles, and seeing that you are one of the co-founders of Dietitians for Professional Integrity, I'd love to kind of go into that and sort of the story of what happened here and what we're up against with the Academy for Nutrition and Dietetics and this whole field of dietetics, nutrition and dietetics in general.
Well, the Kraft Singles thing was so interesting because for years now, the Academy has been completely in bed with the big food players, Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, Hershey's, McDonald's, Kellogg's, General Mills, the list goes on and on and on. And of course, let's not forget, too, the National Dairy Council. And, you know, for years now, you know, even back, speaking of Marion Nestle, I mean, Marion Nestle is one of the first people who I think in the mid-90s is already kind of writing about this. Once I got into the profession, I started seeing some very troubling things at the conferences, so I started writing about that. And then in early 2013, Michelle Simon, who is another one of my mentors and role models, who's fantastic, a public health attorney out of Oakland, published a report about the ties between industry and the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics.
And she's one of the main voices for corporate accountability.
Yes. Her report got national media attention. So I thought that a few weeks after that, it kind of set up the perfect space for parties to come together and keep that conversation going, because what the Academy wants most is for the issue to not be talked about. So I got together a few other dietitian colleagues, and we decided to create a group. And the group is mainly an advocacy group, but also an awareness building group, because a lot of dietitians were largely unaware of the ties, or if they were, didn't understand the implications. There's many troubling implications.
How can they not understand the troubling implications of the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics being aligned with a company like Coca-Cola?
I'll tell you. And I'll tell you because I experienced it myself. And it's like, you know, when I first went back to school for nutrition to get my dietitian credential, I remember like the first year or two going to the annual conference and being completely swayed by the industry speak, right? Because what I always say is that the food industry does not engage in amateur hour tactics. Everything they do is well-researched. They know exactly what they're doing and why they're doing it. And they're very skilled at blending just the right amount of science and then putting their spin on it. So they're talking about, I don't know, calories and weight loss. We're talking about hydration. But they do it in a way that on the surface, it kind of matches what basic science says, but then they insert their own little spin on it. And it's very easy to get caught up in that.
Is it really?
In that corporate speak. And the reason why is because the Academy co-signs on it. What happens is that when a lot of people get into the profession, even if initially something might sound off, well, then they see that, you know, the Academy president is at a Coca-Cola event, or the Academy in the journal writes about how these companies are helping the Academy's vision and mission. And the other thing is that it's also a profession where questioning things is not really looked at very favorably.
Well, I mean, I think that that's in life, you know, in general. I don't think that anything too big, whether it's, you know, a corporation or an institution, even a school, they don't like you questioning anything. They want to do things the way they do it, and they don't want anybody disrupting them.
Absolutely. So there's a very subversive way they do that. For example, if you notice that the dietitians who largely the Academy awards at the conference are usually are these who are involved in industry. So there's many ways that they send this message that you will succeed if you're industry friendly, you know, we'll put your name out there, and if you're not, then you're on your own. And to a lot of people, that's not a position they want to be in necessarily.
I'll tell you something. I think I was born in the wrong era because I was born with such a large BS barometer that I can't even conceptualize anybody thinking that there is anything positive about most of these corporations' food choices and food production. I mean, to the point that I can't understand, and call me naive and ignorant, but as a culinary nutritionist coming at all of this from the food world and knowing food and being in this space for 30 years, I just don't know how somebody who studies nutrition can actually stand on national television and tell you that a Skippy peanut butter laced with trans fats and sugar is a part of a healthy breakfast.
It's terrible. And I remember a few years ago when I was at, again, one of the Academy conferences, having a conversation. This was right after Dietitians for Professional Integrity got started. But I was talking to a dietitian who was not supportive of the group. And one of the arguments that she had was that she coaches athletes and PepsiCo makes pretzels and she sometimes tells her athletes to eat pretzels. So therefore, why do I have concerns about PepsiCo sponsoring the Academy? I mean, that was the degree of the conversation.
Interesting.
And it's just mind-blowing because when that's the argument you're presented with,
right,
it gives you an indication of just maybe how much is not being considered or what's not being brought into the picture. It was really...
Well, I remember not that long ago, there was an American Diabetes Association event, and it was sponsored by Jelly Bellies, the jelly beans.
Yeah.
And so I tweeted about it, and they got very upset with me. And they said, well, they're not really linked with them, So the sponsorship came in through something else. And I'm like, what kind of message are you sending to consumers?
I also tweeted about it, and I got that same response tweet from the American Diabetes Association. And again, it's one of those things where I'm not going to try to fit my response in 140 characters.
Neither am I.
Back to the fact that if you are linking your name to a candy company,
right,
I don't care about the details and the minutia of the legal contract. Your name is associated with them.
You and I are going to be in food jail together.
Yeah.
So before we have to wrap this segment out, I want to go back to these craft singles, because I don't know if my listeners actually know about what happened here, but Kraft American Singles got a big stamp of approval back in the early spring from the Academy for Nutrition and Dietetics, a Kids Eat Right logo. And there was a huge upheaval.
Well, it's interesting. There's a few things to point out there. One is that, you know, it's not so much that Kraft was granted a seal. I mean, in reality, Kraft bought the seal. Kraft paid money to the Academy, and in return, it got a seal. You know, a Kids Eat Right seal.
Isn't it amazing what money can buy?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they make it seem like, well, the Academy sat around a table and thought, who can we award a seal to? No, it was paid for. And, you know, what's interesting, too, about that is that it kind of shows the, trying to find the right word here, perhaps the obliviousness, to put it nicely,
yeah,
of the Academy, in the sense that I think they're so used to doing whatever they want with the food industry,
right,
that I think they went into this thinking, oh, yeah, well, maybe there'll be a few people complaining, but, you know, who cares, right? Because we already have partnerships with Pepsi and Coke and blah, blah, blah. And I don't think they were expecting the amount of outrage from their own constituents,
yeah,
as they got. Because initially, when a few people raised the flag, like the group that I co-founded,
right,
they kept saying, well, it's not an endorsement, it's just a seal showing that they support our work. But then as time went on, and you know, and it made the Daily Show. I mean, Jon Stewart was
I know.
Partners. And they still kind of doubled down on the, it's not an endorsement. And then it just got out of hand, and they had to finally admit that it was not the wisest decision. But that took weeks.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'll always go back to intention. And I feel that to make any kind of impact in consumer choice, companies and organizations like A&D, Academy for Nutrition and Dietetics, even American Diabetes Association, we have responsibilities to consumers to make choices with a high level of integrity, which will parlay well into our next segment, where I really want to talk about your advocacy group. So we'll be right back to continue the conversation with Andy Bilotti. I'm culinary nutritionist Stephanie Sachs, stirring the pot. I'm Stephanie Sachs. This is Stirring the Pot, and I'm speaking with Andy Bilotti about nutrition integrity. And we were just, I guess, pontificating about the problems with some food truth and how both of us are going to end up in some sort of food jail, probably with Michelle Simon and Marion Nestle and Anna LaPay and a lot of others. But that's okay. Andy, I want to really talk about Dietitians for Professional Integrity and what you guys do.
We mainly are advocating for the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics to sever its ties to problematic sponsors like Coca-Cola, PepsiCo, General Mills, and Kellogg's. And the main way that we're doing that at the moment is by educating our fellow colleagues on the issues at hand. So, you know, on our Facebook page, we share all sorts of articles, journal articles, opinion pieces from all sorts of public health and nutrition experts that show what happens when industry starts funding health organizations, whether it's buying silence, whether it's co-opting science, to kind of connect the dots for people.
Well, I think that's a really important point. Actually, there are two things that I wanted to talk about that came out of what you just said. First of all, integritydietitians.org is the website, and I
yes.
urge my listeners to go sign up. You guys have a quarterly newsletter, I believe?
Yes, we do.
And to follow them on Facebook and Twitter. This is the first question that I have for you, and that is, when we talk about which are the big food companies that are tied to the Academy for Nutrition and Dietetics, let's just take General Mills and their recent acquisition of Annie's. Okay. Mm-hmm. Annie's was definitely the better for you alternative, mac and cheese and Kraft food and so many other, I always call them the better for you alternative Kraft foods. And you look at a company like that, which has exponentially grown and now they're acquired by General Mills. And I call it sort of big food and the good guys they ate. Now, how do we, because when you think of Cascadian Farms and Weir Glen or some of these smaller companies that were doing the right thing and still are doing the right thing, and now they're owned by these larger corporations who are mostly not doing the right thing. Can A&D say, well, you know, we believe in what Annie's is doing and Weir Glen or Cascadian, but we don't believe in what they're doing with all of these other things and still align themselves with a company like General Mills? I'm being devil's advocate here, if you haven't noticed.
So what you're asking is, can A&D kind of pick and choose what specific brands they want to align themselves with within a large company?
Yeah. I mean, could that be? I mean, because so many of these large companies, as you know, I mean, Hormel just bought Applegate.
Right. Well, but it's problematic because, you know, I've also heard the whole idea that, well, PepsiCo owns Quaker and Oats are healthy, so why shouldn't we take money from PepsiCo? But it largely has to do with the larger company that you're supporting in the sense that, let's take PepsiCo as an example, it's still a company that largely profits from soft drinks and chips because they own Lay's.
And from making people really sick.
Exactly. And in the case of General Mills, I mean, they're largely, I mean, of course, I understand they have many different brands, but they largely make money from sugary cereals.
Absolutely.
Like Pillsbury, Betty Crocker. I mean, the bulk of their product portfolio is not healthy. And even with something like Annie's, which I understand was a better alternative, at the end of the day, it's still mac and cheese.
Right. No, absolutely.
So it's one of those things where, for me, it's not just problematic because I feel like if A&D were to say, well, we'll only accept sponsorship from certain companies for certain brands within your company, General Mills would probably find a way to try some kind of deal in the sense that, okay, but you also, for example, you can do that, but we won't allow you to speak negatively of sugary cereal or whatever it might be.
So we have to look at it as the whole. Now, do you think that the Academy has the potential of developing some measure of integrity? Because right now, in my book, they're a bit of a joke.
And that's the sad part. And that's really why the group was started, because we feel that we have worked so hard for the credential. You know, we went to school for years, took an exam. We have a lot of knowledge. And then we have to constantly kind of defend our credential because our own organization is dragging it through the mud. You know, we often talk about how A&D reminds us of that completely inappropriate family member at family reunions so you have to apologize for because they say that sort of so, you know, and you're just cringing and embarrassed. It's that kind of dynamic.
It is.
And what we also don't understand is that we calculated it, and when you look at the amount of money that comes in from these companies, if it was completely done away with, all it would take is for each current member of the Academy to pay an additional $30 a year, which is less than $3 a month.
Right.
To make up for that money. So we're not talking about some situation where, well, if these sponsorships were gone, the dues would be about $600 higher. I mean, it's $30 more a year.
Right.
So in my mind, strengthens the argument to get rid of them because it's not even anything that crucial.
Right. How do you sort of explain or justify the dietitians who end up working for these big corporations and come out and can actually put their head down on the pillow at night feeling good about what food they're standing behind being produced?
So our organization focuses mainly on the actual Academy, not on individual dietitians and what they do, in the sense that at the end of the day, what each person does, you know, it's on their own terms. But what I often say is that if dietitians are going to work with companies, they should strive to look for companies that truly support public health, because there are some that do that. So I don't think working for industry as a whole is bad. If you're working for a company that sells, I don't know, loose leaf tea and spices and or whatever it might be, that's one thing. But I think when you start to work for companies that mainly make soda, that's a problem. And also it comes down to what you do for them, because if you are, you know, advocating for people to include, I don't know, more nuts and seeds for a company that sells nuts and seeds, that's one thing. But when you are spinning science to make soda seem harmless, that's much more problematic.
Well, which brings me to my second question, actually, when we started out this segment, is the science and how much science out there is actually objective third-party science on many of these products?
Well, not much, and that comes out to a larger problem of, you know, there isn't that much public funding for nutrition science, and that's really why a lot of these researchers have to end up taking money from companies, because, you know, companies have, of course, realized that if they're able to fund studies, they can definitely seem more objective, and that's why you also have all these companies now with their institutes. You know, the Coca-Cola Institute for Health and Wellness, the Hershey's Nutrition Center,
the
General Mills Institute, because it's all the way to have a clearinghouse that controls science about your products.
It's like one big hypocrisy.
Yeah, and it's one huge machine. And unfortunately, yeah. That's the thing. I always go back to, it's a well-oiled machine. Industry knows what it's doing. So if you really want to fight industry, you have to know what you're doing too.
Well, right. And what I always boil it down to, you know, as my head is in a lot of this stuff, just like yours is, when I'm working with people one-on-one, because most of my work started working with people one-on-one and educating people one-on-one, teaching groups and so on and so forth, and writing, you're writing to the consumer and you want them to be able to walk away with things that they can do to make a difference in their health. And so how do we take all that we know and dial it down in a way where we're providing people with guidance, you know, and you're doing it in your work?
Yeah, and my clientele is, you know, the health literacy is very low. So it's not, I can't go talking about food politics and all that shit to my clientele because it just would not be appropriate or even make any sort of impact. So I keep it simple. I talk about eating as much home-cooked food as possible.
Yep.
Completely eliminating soda. I don't care about the whole world, but you have to teach you in moderation. When it comes to soda, I tell them no soda at all.
Right.
And everybody who eliminates soda has some kind of health success.
I
so,
agree.
You know, I take a more home-cooked meal to eliminate soda. And then I talk about eating as many whole plant-based foods as possible.
Right. You have to hit them with the positive. You know, you always have to hit them with the positive because I think that that's where we have to meet people, is in a place that they understand. All the stuff we're talking about, a lot of people don't spend as much time caring about it.
Well, and you also need, a lot of times, I think, to have this kind of conversation, you need so much context that has to be understood already, that if you're trying to catch somebody up when you have a 30-minute session,
right,
it's not the best use of your time. And the other thing that people love is they love it when I give them recipes. People love recipes. You know, it's funny because I often read all these silly articles about, you know, 8 healthy fast food meals that nutritionists approve of. Nobody, and I've been at this job for 3 years, nobody has ever come to my office and asked me, how can I eat healthy at McDonald's? Not one.
Right.
And I'm constantly asked, do you have some good recipes for, like I heard, you know, somebody once told me, I've been hearing about chia seeds. What can I do with them? So I give them a bunch of recipes. That's a lot more useful.
Yeah.
Everything else about, you know, healthy fast food meals, every time I see that an article like that, I just don't even read it anymore. It's just not good for my blood pressure.
Well, you know, and the other thing too, a lot of these journalists I find want to really put very valuable information into a box. And a lot of times I'll get asked to contribute to articles that are about avocados and calorie content and how many avocados you should have a day. And they wanted all of these very specifics. And I finally wrote back and I said, I actually can't do this for you because I don't want to be part of the problem.
Right, exactly.
Okay, stop micromanaging nutrients and just teach people how to eat food, how to get into the kitchen, how to enjoy themselves. There's so much fear when it comes to food, rightfully so, but oftentimes misguided fear. So
very misguided, because I can't tell you how many times I have people who I'm coaching who, for example, think nothing of having sugary cereal or a Nutri-Grain bar or, you know, for breakfast. But then when you talk about eating an avocado, they suddenly go, well, but that's really fatty.
It's called re-education, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And industry plays a large role because, you know, the way they market a lot of these junk, highly processed foods, they market them as healthy and people get very confused, and rightfully so.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, I think it's about helping people understand what choices that they do have and how to decode all these labels. And so, Andy, where can people find you?
If you go to smallbites.andybilotti.com, that's where I used to have my blog. And now that's where I post all my freelance articles, any articles that I'm quoted in. I'm also on Twitter at Andy Bellotti. That's B-E-L-L-A-T-T-I.
Okay, great. And also Dietitians for Professional Integrity is at integritydietitians.org, right?
Yes, correct.
Well, thank you so much for being a part of the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm glad we got to touch base, and I know that there's a topic we're both super passionate about, so the time really flew by.
It did. We could go on and on and on. And so hopefully my listeners pick something up from this, and please check Andy out. He is surely a tour de force.
Thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure.
Yes, and now it's time for the weekly Yom Coast to Coast with Sax and Katz.
Life is just a bowl of cherries. Don't make it serious. Life's too mysterious. Life is just a bowl of cherries. So live and laugh at it all.
Hello, Rebecca.
Hello, Stephanie.
We're actually featuring recipes from books that we love. So this is very exciting.
I know. I am very excited because there are so many great writers out there.
Unbelievable. So who are we featuring today, may I ask?
Well, we are featuring one of my favorite cookbook authors, Laura Russell. And this is a recipe that comes from her new book, Brassicas. It is a Romanesco summer salad. For anybody that does not know what Romanesco is, it is a hybrid. It's a love child of cauliflower and broccoli.
I love that. Love child?
A love child of cauliflower and broccoli. It's actually closer to cauliflower in terms of how it tastes and how it's used. And this is a really colorful and lively salad.
So where does Nutritious Meat Delicious here?
Well, she steams it, right? And then she tosses it with lemon and olive oil and red bell pepper and sliced onion and dill and capers. And Nutritious is how can you go wrong whenever you're talking about a brassica? So high in phytonutrients and cancer-fighting phytochemicals, and so yummy tossed in that lemon juice and wonderful mustardy yum.
And you also have the onions, which are like a natural antibiotic.
Absolutely. I mean, this is just such a winner on so many different levels, and it's beautiful looking, and we eat with our eyes.
I know, it's absolutely gorgeous. Well, don't forget to check out the weekly Yum recipe this week. It's Romanesco summer salad, and you can find it on my blog at stephaniesacks.com. I'd like to thank my guest, Andy Bilotti, Rebecca Katz, and to everybody who helps me stir the pot. I welcome you to engage in conversation by finding me on Facebook at Stephanie Sacks. My Twitter handle is Stephanie_Sacks, and that's Stephanie with an F for food. You can catch everything Stirring the Pot and, of course, What the Fork via my blog at stephaniesacks.com. This show would not be possible without the generous support of Naturopathica Healing Arts Center and Spa. And thank you for tuning in to Stirring the Pot, where nutritious always meets delicious. Stirring the Pot. Stirring the Pot was recorded at WPPB 88.3 FM, Peconic Public Broadcasting, Southampton, New York.